I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Alrighty, what's going on, everybody? My name is Josh. Welcome to the Barca Blog on its podcast. Today, we are going to be joined by our old pal, Emil Avanesyan. Emil writes for Hardwood Hype, along with a variety of other places about different topics, NBA, NFL, restaurants, football. This guy talks about it all. He writes about it all. And we're going to talk about Barcelona, unfortunately. Probably one of the least fun topics he gets to talk about on a regular basis. We're going to talk about Ronald Koeman and the strange statements that he released. We're going to talk about Joan Laporta's response. We're going to talk about Barcelona forgetting how to score goals, sitting seventh in the Liga. And then just because Barcelona is too depressing to talk about for an extended period of time, we're probably going to take a trip around European football and just chat about PSG and a few other clubs. So everyone, enjoy the podcast. Be sure to subscribe if you are not subscribed. Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, Overcast, all the places you get your podcast. And here is Emil. Alrighty, everyone. Welcome to the Barca Blogger's podcast. I'm joined by our old pal, Emil Avanesyan. Emil, how are we doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing better than Barcelona. Let's just get it out of the way. Let's talk about it. I'm going to read off Ronald Koeman's statement. In case you haven't heard this, Ronald Koeman was due to give his usual pre-match press conference before Wednesday's 0-0 barn burner. And he showed up and he had a statement in his hand and then he walked out. And the statement read, "Hello, everyone. The club is with me as the coach in a situation of rebuilding." Just the phrasing there. The financial situation of the club is connected to the sporting activities and vice versa. This means that we as a team have to rebuild the football team without being able to make any big financial investments. This needs time. The young talent today could end up being the next big world stars in just a few years. In order to reconstruct this team means that younger players get opportunities like Xavi and Iniesta had in their day, but we must ask for patience. What's more, being in a high ranking in the league would be a success. This is a great footballing school for these talents. In the Champions League, we can't hope for miracles. The defeat to Bayern last week has to be focused from that perspective. The process that we are in right now, the staff with the team deserves unconditional support in word and in actions. I know the press recognized the process. It's not the first time in Barcelona's history that this has happened. We count on your support in this difficult time. The staff and the players are very happy with the great support from the fans like we had against Granada, Visca, El Barça. And then El Presidente came out and said, "We found out at the last minute that he wanted to do it. The coach has the obligation to go to the press conference and he is free to answer questions or express himself as he sees fit. I respect his decision. We found out minutes before, just like the captains." We are in a difficult moment. We have a lot of serenity and hope that there will be a good result against, a good result. That is what matters. These situations overcome with good results. This week, we have two important games. We're going to move on and keep fighting. Wow. So what was your reaction from that press conference?
Everything is awesome. So there's nothing to see. Look, I mean, Koeman wasn't like, strictly speaking, like Koeman wasn't lying about anything he said, you know? I mean, like if anything, it was a lot of like harsh truth, which in a sense is probably not the worst thing, but what it reminds me of is, so I think we've talked about, like I've done a lot of sort of nerding out on the sort of the 90s and early 2000s, kind of the post Cruyff, pre Ronaldinho era at Barca. And so much of this between this past, I don't know, what do you want to say, like 4 years, mirrors so perfectly kind of the 97 to like 03 period at the club, where down, you know, everything from two iconic superstars unexpectedly leaving. Back then it was Ronaldo and Figo, and this time around it was Neymar, just out of nowhere got poached, and then and obviously Messi. I mean, sure, you can even throw Suarez in there, but Neymar and Messi.
Are you gonna throw Griezmann in there too, or?
He's a good player. It wasn't a good fit. I think it was the Griezmann thing too. I think it was so much of Bartomeu. I think you and I have talked about how Bartomeu isn't kind of a football guy. Like it's not his area of expertise. And for some reason, you know, it was like his thing. Like Griezmann became his white whale almost. And you know, because I remember, I think the year before they got him, Barca made a concerted effort to get him, and Atleti, I think, resisted, or they couldn't agree a price, something like that. And so he was just, you know, just completely focused on getting him, irrespective of how he actually fit within the team.
I got you off on a tangent on Griezmann here. Go back to what you were talking about. This is very similar to when Figo.
So the aftermath, or kind of that era where Neymar and Messi are in a sense kind of the peak, you know, 20-year-old Ronaldo and Luis Figo at his prime, who, against the wishes of the club and the fans, were transferred away in kind of what 97 and 2000. That was what led to the downfall of President Nunez, the guy who had axed Johan Cruyff and who essentially is a sympathetic figure, or Bartomeu and Sandro Rosell essentially excommunicated Cruyff when they took power of the club 10 years ago, but brought Nunez back into the fold and kind of celebrated him. So, you know, that's awesome. And the whole thing, this press conference, this statement by Koeman just reeks of everything I've kind of read about the interactions of Louis van Gaal with the Catalan press, essentially once things started going sideways.
I was literally about to say, and this is like a Dutch stereotype, it reminded me of something Louis van Gaal would do.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually stuff, like if you go back and read some of the accounts and just some of the stories from those days, like it's not verbatim, but it's the kind of thing that Van Gaal did say. Like he would push back, and yeah, it's a little bit of kind of the Dutch double down like stereotype kind of thing. What the irony is, though, apparently Koeman and Van Gaal just hate each other, and That's if I'm mistaken, I will wear that. But as far as I know, I mean, I think they really, really don't care for one another very much. But funnily enough, like here they are, kind of he's in the exact same situation that Van Gaal was in, you know, a couple decades ago, and he's kind of saying the same thing.
So when he talks about the club is with me as the coach in a situation of rebuilding, I'm not sure what to make of the reports. I mean, we can
unpack it a little bit. Like, yeah, it's the club are with me. I, you know, everything else he's saying are kind of, you know, is kind of factually accurate. And I mean, I guess he's technically still employed, you know, by the club. So I suppose they are
every
still with
time,
him.
I feel like every week I'm talking to whoever I have on about this. I don't understand if the decision has been made to sack him or whatever. And they're like yearning after Roberto Martinez for some reason.
I don't get that.
I really just like with every other sacking in the last few years, I don't understand what they're so let's just put that to the side. Like you said, what he's talking about in this statement is like mostly true, right? That defeat to Byron does have to be viewed from that perspective, right? And I think that's something most of us kind of realized and talked about, and that's why it wasn't really all that surprising of a result. I think if anything, it was a decent result because Byron decided they weren't going to put up 7 on us, right?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, the first half that Barca played, I mean, just given the genuine, you know, gulf in talent, experience, and everything between the two sides, I mean, Barca created chances in that first half. And, you know, they didn't look like the better team, but they looked like they were there to fight and compete and play.
Yeah, and then Byron actually started. Byron didn't feel like they were trying at all in that game either, which was the. And I can't remember who said this. Yeah. It might have been Kevin Williams. I had him on last week. Mm. Someone said, just like the physicality, like just looking at the two sides, like physically, it looked like an A team versus a B team. And I get that's because Barcelona's a little bit smaller, and that doesn't, you know, Messi's historically small, of course, and he was great.
And I mean, even if you look at like Busquets is. Yeah. Not a physically imposing guy.
Just
like
the physicality just looked just like, I mean, it was just, it was miles.
Yes, it was.
So let's talk about El Presidente coming out. And again, this is just like where I don't understand anything that this club is doing at this point. and for him not to just go out and be like, just lie, say like, sure, we knew he was going to do it. And I guess I would get his reaction of like, we found out last minute if the things that Koeman said were like wrong or far off base, or like saying that I've been promised
or pointing fingers at the president or something. Yeah.
The statement was very like nonchalant. So when I heard like, oh, Koeman made this crazy statement, I was expecting to read something wild. And when I read it, I was like,
yeah,
it seems like something the club would have been okay with him saying. So I don't really understand why Laporta felt the need to come out and somewhat like go against it.
So it's partly what you said. I mean, I think on some level, I think Koeman's, you know, what's the term for it? I mean, I guess like the writing's on the wall is like Koeman's like goose is cooked at some point.
I mean, the writing's on the wall as soon as you sign your first contract with Barcelona at this point. It's pathetic.
Yeah, like there is not I was actually speaking with someone recently about this. And kind of, if you go back through history, right, there was probably a period in the sort of early mid. So let's say like 92, 93, Johan Cruyff was absolutely 100% secure and beloved in his job as Barcelona manager. The next time any manager could legitimately make that claim, I mean, it was probably, I mean, what we can say Rijkaard after he won the Champions League, but then he was also not long for the club. I mean, he was gone in a couple of years. And then what Guardiola's like circa 2009, 2010. And then probably Luis Enrique for a short period, but then kind of the thing, I mean, I think Johan Cruyff had a term for it. I think he called it like the Entorno or something, like the storm inside the club. But like the Entorno came for Luis Enrique too. But it's kind of, I mean, there's probably been in the last like 25 to 30 years, there's probably been at most what do you want to say? Like 4 years, 5 years where the manager of a club that's won 4 Champions Leagues and you know what, 18 or something league titles has actually rested comfortably at night.
And to be fair, like this isn't just the Barcelona thing, right? Like Madrid do the same thing. Chelsea are famous for that. I guess City haven't really accomplished like all is what they've wanted to, and Guardiola has been safe. But like most clubs are, I shouldn't say most. Really, it's just like Chelsea and Real Madrid are kind of like Barcelona in that.
And I'm not an expert in this regard, but I know that from bits that I've read, apparently Bayern is similar. Like if as soon as kind of like the mood is quick to shift, if kind of if results and style and everything at Bayern aren't, you know, up to snuff for like for the
I guess
the board,
we just
and
haven't
the very
seen it shift, so I haven't been aware that like,
yeah, that, like they've just been so yeah they've been good, it's been fine there, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, but so I mean I think there's that sense, but I don't know if Laporte is trying to play this. I mean, it's either a way to kind of further kind of cement Koeman as on the outs, you know, sort of leave him on an island to really get kind of battered around by the press a little bit until.
I don't think he needs any help having that happen to
him. No, exactly. Like it's, yeah, I agree. I mean, these are clearly the words of, like they're not backing this guy. You know what I mean? Like they're just,
that's why I don't understand why they went into the season with him. If like, because these results aren't surprising, right? Barcelona sitting seventh in the Liga, getting destroyed by Bayern. Like none of this is surprising to literally anybody. And so not a month ago, or maybe a little more than a month ago, was when he got the dreaded vote of confidence where it was like, you know, we're heading into the season with this guy. And everyone knew he was like, if things don't go super well, he's probably going to be on the chopping block. But like, is Laporta really that dumb to where like he thought that there was a chance they would be like great? It's just so strange to me that we're in the situation in mid-September.
I know. And the problem is that it happened this, I mean, not so much the problem. I mean, there are multiple problems, but the surprise is that it happened this early in the season. But so, I mean, I think there's two things. One is, and I hate this. It's like the specter that we come back to every time when we talk about the club, but like there's the financial quagmire that they're in, you know, like there is no money. And, so to fire this guy, I mean, I've heard varying reports, but I think like if they fire him, they owe him somewhere between like, it's something like between 10 and 14 million euros to buy him out. Like if they give him the boot. So there's that. I mean, on the one hand, you might just be stuck with them, you know, just, or at least try to, I think the hope was to at least have him turn in a passable season this season, whatever that meant, you know, maybe second place, third place, a decent Copa del Rey run and, you know, kind of don't embarrass yourself in the Champions League kind of thing. And at least like we can get some value for the money that we have to pay you anyway, rather than paying him whatever it is, like 5 or 6 million euros a year to not coach.
How crazy is that? Barcelona are so broke. They can't even afford to be their own incompetent employers. Like they can't even afford to fire people like that anymore.
There's apparently like court stuff with Quique Setién. Apparently like he's suing for like 20 million or something, or it's 12, or it might be as much as 20. Like because of the way that they exited his contract.
It's just like the least surprising thing ever. I mean, I know it was last September was when the lawsuit stuff started to, like when he did sue Barcelona. So I'm not sure where that is.
Because I actually missed that thing. Yeah, like I think I missed that. But that's apparently still ongoing. Like that hasn't been settled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so, I mean, I think that's part of the problem is you can't look under, you can't like open a door or like look under a pebble without finding a new $20 million liability, you know, it's just everywhere. It's so, I mean, I guess there's that. I mean, I think they're kind of hamstrung in that we can't afford to pay this guy eight figures to go away and then actually, you know, pay the market rate for a, you know, a good of the moment coach.
Is Roberto Martinez that guy?
Oh my! I mean, look, I know
he flopped at Everton. He had like what, one good season at Everton, and then he was kind of like ushered out.
Yeah, and you can even, I think Was it one season? Yeah, it was one or two. Like, because I think the last, like, I mean, I guess they finally kind of pulled it together with the, you know, sort of lived up to expectations to an extent with the Belgian national team. But like, even that group, I mean, I don't think you can make the argument that Martinez has gotten the most out of what, like, I mean, like, you look at the Belgian national team, and I understand only one team can win. France is a juggernaut and all of that. But like, you can't tell me that Martinez has actually gotten the most out of just this star studded, you know, just De Bruyne, Lukaku. And, you know, at the time it was like peak Vertonghen and Alderweireld and outstanding goalkeepers. And I'm even selling it short. I mean, there's still so many other great players that I'm not even mentioning.
Yeah. I mean, so his Everton career, right? He had a really good 2013-14 year. I think they finished fourth. And then he signed a 5-year contract. Mm. And not 2 years later, he was sacked. And like you said, I mean, it's hard to oversimplify it, but like, you could put a stick figure in front of Belgium and they would probably like still make it out of the group stage of the World Cup. And there has been nothing impressive about Martinez. And so he just seems like, if this is the guy, maybe it's all they can get is a Roberto Martinez at this point.
When I think he was born and I don't put that much in this, but I think he was born in Catalonia. So I don't know if that's meant to be like supposed to buy him a little bit of cover or something.
I don't know. I mean, all that reminds me of is, so I'm a Michigan fan of college football, right? And that was always the thing, right? It's like, after their legendary coach, Lloyd Carr, retired, it was, we got to bring in a Michigan man, right? We got to bring in someone who
was Harbaugh.
Well, yeah. And I still support Harbaugh. But
I get that.
Before that, it was Brady Hoke, and it was, you know, it was this important thing.
Oh,
and
so yeah.
Maybe that's the idea, right? Is Roberto Martinez, you know, he's a Barcelona man. But it's just, I don't know. It seems just like another lame duck coach that would come in and eventually get sacked.
Yeah, because I mean, look, from the sounds of it, I mean, if all the kind of the public noises that we're hearing are to be believed, so this whole thing is all roads lead back to Xavi at some point. And
oh my, I mean, listen, if you want to, I hope it doesn't happen, both for Xavi and for the club, but I more so for selfish reasons, I hope it doesn't happen. I do not want to have to talk about Xavi underachieving every week because Barcelona have a crap squad and Xavi gets blamed for everything, just like Koeman is.
Well, I think,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, I mean,
wait, are you pro bringing Xavi in?
Look, not necessarily. Look, the thing is, Koeman's not long for this chair, you know. So the question is quickly going to have to become, fine, if not Koeman, then who? We don't really have there's not really a great short-term bridge or like a caretaker type around.
But that's what Koeman was supposed to be. That's the right. This is the same conversation we had with Koeman, is he's a caretaker. Yeah. And it's like, if you bring Roberto Martinez in, is he the caretaker till Xavi? So you give him 16 to 18 months and then he's gone too?
Yeah. So, cause I mean, I don't know anything on this front, but my understanding or kind of assumption is that, so Xavi's currently coaching in the Qatari League. And I think the biggest reason I'm not just delighted at the prospect of one day having Xavi come in, is that I've not really enjoyed his full-throated support for all things Qatar ahead of the World Cup. And as he's been, you know, just stacking those checks. But look, I mean, I understand you have to feed your family. You got to do what you got to do. But that's gotten a little bit tiresome. But so my assumption is that he's going to stick around in Qatar essentially as a global, you know, superstar face of their league and an ambassador for their World Cup.
Well, he can leave now because James Rodriguez just joined the Qatari league from Everton today. So, you know, Xavi can leave the league in good hands.
Yeah, exactly. Man, you know, the James thing is like, I feel really bad for that too.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that goal in the World Cup, literally just like his career. It's just like,
I know.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
Yeah. But so, I mean, the Xavi thing, my assumption is though, he's going to stick around because I'm sure he's on some sort of like, essentially like a brand ambassador type contract. So, you know,
there were all the reports that he had the out for Barcelona in his contract that he denied or whatever.
Yeah. And look, on the one hand, I understand where, you know, you probably wouldn't want to give up what's probably a very lucrative job in Qatar to come and deal with this.
You would have to be insane if you're Xavi to leave what he has right now to come to Barcelona anytime soon.
In a weird way though, look, I mean, short of what, like among living former Barca players, I don't know any, I mean, Iniesta's probably held in higher regard or, you know, kind of on a similar plane. I mean, Xavi is probably the most beloved, still living, still like working age former Barca player. So if anyone is going to get, you know, some serious latitude to come in, take their time and try to build something and not just try to spackle over everything.
Yeah, I mean, ask Chelsea fans about how that went with Frank Lampard, right? Or with Andrea Pirlo. Like,
well, Pirlo had never done the job before, like even at a lower league.
I mean, the perfect comparison though is Frank Lampard, and that Chelsea Frank team Lampard is actually the best talented enough. And
yeah,
that Chelsea team, right? Like, you put a good manager in there, they win the Champions League. Now they're the most formidable team in Europe.
Yeah,
Barcelona. Not close, right? And so there might be some Barcelona fans who would argue Koeman is Frank Lampard. And if you bring in a competent manager now, Barcelona would be. But nobody thinks that they're that good of a squad, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, Koeman didn't really have that much of a... I mean, he had a good run recently with the Dutch national team prior to taking the Barca job. But if I'm not mistaken, like, he had no... he was good at Southampton, I guess, like, several years back.
He's just like Roberto Martinez.
That's what I mean. Like he has, other than whatever was accomplished with Southampton and, you know, a couple good years heading up the Dutch national team, but every other managerial job he had ended terribly. Yeah, because like he flamed out at Everton too.
Yeah.
Like literally like Roberto Martinez. So, I mean, it's just... Yeah, so I mean, it's not like Koeman was brought in. He was brought in and celebrated because of what he did as a player. There was no, and you know, and he learned at the knee of Johan Cruyff, but there's nothing tangible that he himself has done that suggested that he was cut out for this.
Yeah, there's just like the, if not Koeman, then who? If not Roberto Martinez, then who? And it's just good, like all roads lead back to like they're eventually just gonna have to hire Xavi and let him flame out and move on. But I'm just
Because I mean I genuinely can't figure out who else. I mean, like, none of the other guys are coaches slash, like, you know, it's not like Puyol's not trying to get in and do the job. Iniesta's still playing in Japan.
And I think he still made the top 10 highest paid footballers list this year, if I'm not mistaken, Iniesta.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think that's so.
Man, I mean, I see his pictures on like Twitter and Instagram of him and his family like hanging out in like these beautiful like Japanese gardens and stuff. You can do that and just be awash in cash. That's pretty great.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Here we go. Top paid footballers. I think Sir Ronaldo overtook Messi as number one. Let's see.
Neymar's got to be up there.
Neymar's 3, Mbappe 4, Salah 5, Lewandowski 6, Andres Iniesta, number 7, total earnings, wow. 35 million.
Good for wow. Me.
Gareth Bale.
Well done.
And, Eden Hazard still cracking the top 10 too. So no Barca players for the first time in a hot minute.
Yeah, but
I'm tired of talking about this crap team, but I do have to say Barcelona have scored 4 goals in their last 5 matches. They sit 7th in La Liga. Their manager is already somewhat out the door. The talent. The thing that's surprising me a little bit is like I thought it would be the other way around. I thought they would be able to score goals, but I thought they'd be conceding a lot. Just like
I kind of thought that too.
let's take a few minutes to talk about on the pitch play. Has that been the biggest surprise for you, is that they're not conceding a bunch?
A little bit. Yeah, because their defense last year was already not great. And then, so you put extra, Piqué and Alba are another year older coming in. And there's so much kind of, it's either youth or inexperience, I guess, depending on how it pans out. But the guys who are back there, I know like Eric Garcia is nobody's favorite at this point. Like he's just, but there is talent back there. You know what I mean? And I don't know if they fully kind of coalesced. I don't even know if that's the word, but they've done a decent enough job of playing together. I'm frankly really surprised by it. Like, I don't have a really great explanation other than.
So here's the thing. The only formidable offensive opponent they've played so far this year is Bayern, and they gave up 3 goals. Coming up, we have Benfica, Atletico Madrid, and Real Madrid, 3 of the next 6 matches, 3 of the next 7 matches. We also play Valencia. So we're going to get a bit more of a stress test on Barcelona's defense. And based off of how Luke de Jong...
God, and Barca always have trouble with Levante too. So that's... Yeah. Those games turn into fever dreams sometimes. Yeah, so
like, if we think things are bad now, like next time you and I chat, I can only imagine. Let's just take a quick trip around Europe.
Yeah, that's a rough lineup.
let's wrap up. What are your PSG thoughts right now?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of is what you'd expect, I suppose.
It just reminds me of the Miami Heat when they first got LeBron and they like slowed down a little bit and they were having to figure out how to mesh all these pieces together. I think Pochettino's a really good manager and I think it's just going to take time.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to anyone who's kind of, because people did it all the time with the Heat. Exactly. Like you said, I mean, they're a perfect example of, I don't know if they lost their first game. I think they did. And then
they started off really slow with their record. I remember they lost their first game, the first 20 games or something like that.
Yeah. And everyone was like wringing their hands. And, at the time, look, I'm sure so much of it was just kind of schadenfreude and concern trolling. But, people are like, oh, I don't know. Can they share the ball? Whatever. Look, we've seen it happen enough times. And there is no legitimate reason for concern about PSG. Like if all these guys are, they have kind of a glut of attackers. So, I imagine someone might get annoyed at some point, but like there's no shortage of anything. So
yeah. I mean, anything like you could knock on like their defense, but even that I think will get better as time goes along. I don't know. I'm not really.
Yeah. That's exactly it. I mean, like I'm looking at the league table now and like, they're still first. they're first by 7 points. And Marseille has a game in hand. So fine. But you can call 4 points.
The group is like, they have City, but they're going to be fine in the group. I think
they're going to get through the group. Yeah. But like they already have a plus 13 goal difference. And if Marseille win their next game, a 4-point lead in the league.
Yeah, they're fine. Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna cruise. And I mean, I don't know about the Champions League. That's, and I know that's like the whole thing.
But again, we won't be talking about that mattering till, like, I guess one of the knockout stages, like 2 months from now, 3 months.
It's like
from
February.
Now? Oh, is it not till the new year?
Well, yeah, because now they have like the 10 group stage games too, don't they?
I don't think
that's, or is that no, next year that, or
that's a couple of years from now. They're still only six.
Yeah, that is a couple of years from now. Oh my God. Yeah, it was completely.
Okay, so match day six for Barca is against Bayern, yeah. And that's December 8th. So it'll probably be in the
Yeah, and then year. They take off until right around like Valentine's Day, I think. So mid February.
PSG still have like 4 or 5 months to figure things out. They're going to be fine. What Premier League team are you most keen on right now?
Most keen on, I mean, I guess
it's gotta be Chelsea, right? Don't say any other team besides Chelsea. It's Chelsea.
It is Chelsea. I mean, it is. No, because like, I mean, they're really good. I was pulling it up. Like, I mean, funnily enough, they're not actually. It's all this. It's the same between them and Liverpool. 12 scored, 1 conceded.
Which is better than Liverpool in that match, though. Did you
I mean, they were, but like. But it feels like they've been better. So there's a weird thing with like Liverpool too, where I look and I'm just like, God, we're not even talking about them. And they've done the thing that, I mean, I do feel like Chelsea's been the most impressive. I feel like Liverpool just, they're quietly doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. I just don't.
And they kind of opened the door for us of like, cause you know, they've won a Champions League and a Premier League title in the last, 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it kind of became ho-hum. And then last year they struggled a little bit and kind of got back to a position where they can fly under the radar.
Yeah. And City, honestly, they don't have a striker. And right now they don't need one to score goals, but I think that's going to matter at some point.
Well, these things usually, you know, and given the way most of these European leagues shake out is, if you're as talented as City, you know, not even like PSG, forget PSG. I mean, they're a machine, but like even like a Barca now in through the slog of La Liga, like if they can, you know, whatever, assuming a modest baseline of sort of stability and coaching, what Barca have on hand now should be enough to get through the slog of La Liga, you know, the Alaveses and, you know, basically Alaveses, the Getafes, like that kind of thing where your weaknesses really get magnified is in the big games. So in the Clásicos and against Atleti and in the Champions League and particularly sort of post group stage of the Champions League. So I think that's where, and City are in kind of the same boat as PSG where, everything sort of the litmus test for success for every season is the Champions League.
So last question before we sign off, right now, if you had to, and we're projecting, right. Mm-hmm. Who are your semifinalists in the Champions League? And I'm not asking you to think of like, how the bracket's going to shape out. Like at the end of the season, your top four European teams in your head right now.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm going to say Chelsea, PSG, I'm trying to think of what are the Spanish teams. I don't know if there is a Spanish team.
There's not a Spanish team.
No, right? I mean, I guess it's Chelsea, PSG. I'm going to throw Liverpool in there and it's gonna be Bayern.
Yeah,
you know, I was trying to get a little creative, but just you know, sometimes you just got to play the hits. But
it's either Liverpool or City in that fourth spot, and I think the first three are. I don't see that changing.
No, I mean, I think that's yeah. I mean, I'm a little more. I think there's less kind of with City. I feel like, and you know, they're playing well. They're going to be fine. Like all that stuff. I feel like the peace and the happy vibes at City are a little more tenuous than they are at Liverpool.
For me, the Liverpool thing just relies on Van Dijk. Like if he gets hurt, then I don't trust them as much at all.
Right.
And if City, you could give me any one of their players, even De Bruyne, that gets hurt. And I'm still like, yeah, they could probably still do it.
Yeah, they can probably still do it. I mean, I think the problem comes into, I feel like it's just the whole vibe at City just strikes me as less settled than at Liverpool.
That's why I'm surprised it's lasted this long, to be honest.
Oh, I am a little bit too. I thought Pep would have been gone before this season, but this is, yeah, I mean, I think because his contract's winding down, right? Or did he get a new deal? I don't remember.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what his alternatives are unless Pochettino gets sacked after this year. I don't really know where else he'd want to go.
Yeah. Because he's already done Bayern. He's explicitly said he doesn't want to go back to Barca.
It's literally just like PSG. So I guess he gets a few more years of oil money from City and then he transitions over to different oil money at PSG.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could go to like Italy for a bit if that's a thing that interests him. But
After Allegri gets sacked.
What's that?
After Allegri gets sacked this year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that job sort of seems to always come available every so often.
Okay, wrapping up, what are you working on?
I think I mentioned last time, I mean, I've been doing actually a lot of NFL stuff, which funny enough, I'll send you the link. It's at, is it squawka.com? And I write a weekly power rankings and I've actually just been doing a lot of like copy editing and stuff like that.
Wait, so who are your top three power rankings this week?
So the Bucks, the Chiefs, and, I put the Rams third.
Okay.
But
Rams play the Bucks this week, right? Isn't that Sunday night? Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's Sunday night. Good. Yeah, that game is going to be fantastic. So I don't know if it's Sunday night or
I'm from Detroit.
That might actually be, it might even just be one of the late games, like the Sunday afternoon.
They had to have shifted it.
It's either that or, because there's also Packers Niners. So it's one of those two.
Rams Bucks is, it's the 4:25 game. You're right.
And then, even after week one, so before the season, I picked the Cardinals to win that division.
Ooh.
And after their week one thumping of the Titans, I think I put them in the top five just because I couldn't find.
I don't like Cliff Kingsbury enough, and Kyler still seems to make too many mistakes for me to think they can actually win that division.
I want Cliff Kingsbury to work. Sort of when I had access to all the various sports channels as like a college football sicko, I used to love sort of 11:30 watching Texas Tech games where like just any sort of madness is liable to pop up.
They're and like, it's ending like the Sour Patch Kids of college football.
Yeah. It's like 68-55 with like, halfway through the third quarter or something. Yeah. Those were delightful. So I want Cliff Kingsbury to be a thing. And I love Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Also, and this one has the possibility to blow up in my face, though they are the first 3-0 team. I got on the Carolina bandwagon early.
Oh, but, gosh, that's not happening.
I mean, look, they can win that division. No, not that division, but they can make the playoffs. I'm sorry. But they can come in second in that division. Because what do you have to be better than the Saints, which, man, that week one thumping of the pack.
They were very tempting in week one.
But that was the most fraudulent 38-3 win I've ever seen. Like Jameis threw 5 TDs, but had like 140 yards passing because it was all turnovers and spectacular field position. But I'm big on them. I am heavily not buying the Saints, the Steelers. Who's the other one that I'm? There's one other team that kind of. I'm not buying them as good, no matter how much people try to talk it up. Well, I didn't think the Raiders were good. I mean, I feel like they're going to come back.
They still might not be good because they beat the Steelers team with a corpse at quarterback. So
this is absolutely true. Yeah. I mean, I think, they're not this good. They're more competent offensively than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Vikings were going to be good. They are not.
What about the Cowboys?
I say this every year and like, I'm sort of a lapsed Cowboys fan. So I can't even like, I won't join the parade if they go win the Super Bowl or something. I think they can be pretty good. But I think they're going to win that division. Well, this new guy, the rookie they got, Micah Parsons, that dude looks awesome. And then, their offense is, when they have everybody together and clicking, like they can score with anybody. They're one of those teams. They're like, it's sort of Chiefs light where they can score enough points to get by with like a mediocre defense, but they need at least a mediocre defense, which they typically don't have.
I think we've lost half the audience at this point. All right.
Almost certainly.
Thank you for joining us. We're going to link to your NFL work in the description and we'll chat again soon.